Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Yeah, so I was in the theater and I'm watching 2001, and I gotta say, I don't know that every movie should get a 4K restoration.
I think you're probably right in this regard.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, welcome back, everybody, to Faking Movies. This is episode 68. That's Dixty-8 for those dirty boys out there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And girls and everyone. So we are here, of course. I'm Lee with my dear friend Seth. What's up, Seth?
Hey, we are on the very, very cusp of 69.
We are so close to our nicest episode.
Oh. Yeah, it's true. We're a stone's throw.
Is the next good one 6,969? Is that...
Oh, no, I hope not. I think that the next good one is, obviously, 420 Blaze It.
Yeah.
That's also kind of a ways off, I guess. Okay. In 2026, when we make that one happen, yeah.
If we somehow make that episode, it means either... Oh, that's some foreshadowing there. Anyway, we'll never make it that far. I'm also joined by our dear friend Zach. What's up, Zach?
Not much. Drinking wine at the wrong times. What's up? Well, let's start over.
Drinking wine out of a pint glass, I noticed.
You gonna
weigh in on what I said? Or?
Oh, what'd you say? Drinking wine? I am drinking wine.
Drinking wine out of a pint glass, I noticed.
Oh, as is customary, always.
Yeah, I either drink it out of... to drink wine.
Yeah, it's either out of a 10-ounce, like, huge rocks glass, or I think this is a 24-ounce pint glass, to be fair. It's fucking huge.
And I mean, I only
Which drink... would make it a not a pint glass at that point.
Almost a doubla, yeah. Or one and a half, sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I only drink out of those man cans because I'm embarrassed. My masculinity is embarrassed if I drink a regular wine glass. Yes. So I have to drink out of a man can.
Yeah, I remember
this
that
episode
time.
Sponsored by Man Cans, which is a real product, which is total bullshit.
I remember that time that we went to see the movie Thor in a movie theater, and we brought in a book bag several bottles of wine and a bunch of plastic cups, and you said, "Ugh. If this can't be canned, then I'm not drinking it." And and you were everyone's designated driver that night.
It's true. Except for me, who had Diet Coke that I chugged and then filled with wine.
Oh, so you made your man
still
can.
Yeah.
I'm still a man drinking my Diet Coke like Claudia Schiffer or whatever that commercial was.
Are you talking about the Diet Pepsi commercials with Cindy Crawford?
That's the one. Whatever.
So close. Pretty close. Mm-hmm. Man, there's nothing better than drinking booze in a movie theater that you smuggled in. It's so fun.
I know. We have an Alamo Draft House where I live now, and like I order booze there sometimes. Yeah. Like they just opened up that booze menu to involve some cheap beer, which
okay.
I'm off.
Great.
You know, I'll order a Narragansett Pounder for anything.
No, because it's Lovecraftian, the Nargoleptif, whatever that beer from New England that you guys love. I hate
Genesee?
It.
Genesee? Talk about Genesee.
No, there's one. Nagarlsept. Narthalept.
Narragansett?
Hastor.
Yeah, I think it's the one Lee's talking about.
That's the one.
I think I got the name right the first time.
Yeah, but that's a Lovecraft god, I believe. Because it's one from New England, and two, sounds a little bit like Narthalept, which is a Lovecraft god, so...
Right.
Uh-huh.
So
okay, nobody cares. All right, it's cool.
So, farts for no one.
Yeah, what are we doing this week, guys? Also check out our website and bullshit. All right, so what's up?
Nice and quick. Love that. Doing it. This week I'm doing They Live.
They live.
Who lives, they live.
They do. With Rowdy Ronda Roddy Piper.
Okay. confusing.
Stay tuned for more later. Just kidding. That's
okay. So I think you were making a Ronda Rousey joke, but her and Roddy Piper were friends in real life, and he did tell her that she could use Rowdy as her nickname. Yeah,
he was like a mentor for her. Yeah.
He gave her his leather jacket, which she still wears to the ring every match.
Super cool. Super cool.
Well, you should, because damn.
Yep. Keith ass to ass David.
Okay.
What'd you say? Keith asked to mouth David. What?
Asked. Ooh, I like that one better. But no, I did not say that.
For the listeners at home, this is second episode in a row of recordings.
We
so.
we done goofed it again.
Strap in, because we.
Meg Foster, who I wasn't familiar with, but looks familiar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And someone you explicitly told me not to look up because he's not in anything and was literal filler, Derek George Toombs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So,
So thanks. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we wanted you to have at least four names to play with.
Yeah. That'll come in handy, I assure you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. So, Zach, give us your version of. They live.
You know how like old Russian ladies, they have like little like muffs for their hands where they wear them in front and they put their hands in to keep warm?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I turned my shorts into that. I'm still wearing them, but I got my arms through them right now.
Cool.
That is extremely confusing because you live in a very warm area, so I don't understand.
Yeah, my air conditioning's off.
Oh, my.
What is happening?
All right.
Zach, tell us your stupid story.
Yeah. I didn't think this through logistically, given that this is going to be the second one, but here we go. We're going...
Oh, you've got a lot to read, don't you?
I got a fuckload to read.
I hope it is conceptual.
let's say definitely is. Give me two sentences. I think you'll get it. Yeah.
Yeah, do you want us to vamp or vape or whatever?
No. I want to be uninterrupted for the next 15 minutes. Uh-huh. It's my favorite song.
Oh, look at me. I'm Zach.
I got weirdly adversarial all of a sudden.
I could just mute my mic, but instead I'll just vape and say I'll edit it out later.
Oh, I sound like L. Ron Hubbard.
Sure. Okay, we're going a bit off the traditional path today. My movie, stylized as Live! Exclamation point.
Ooh, I like it. You're definitely pulling a Seth, and that is my bread and butter.
Yep, pretty psyched about it. I mean, I would, so we are going to chronicle the journey of some of the world's most famous...
episodes anymore.
No, we shouldn't.
No, never again.
We are going to chronicle the journey of some of the world's most famous fictional touring musicians who are fictionally alive in today's current world. The whole movie is 80 minutes long because I respect my goddamn audience, and we're splitting it into 20-minute vignettes that have nothing to do with one another.
Okay, so there's four distinct vignettes.
Correct. So this is basically like a short film festival, like, conglomeration. Yeah, okay.
Well, I mean,
it's four short films, right?
Yeah, but with like a very
on the same theme. So it's a curated, it's a curated short film.
So wait, are they narrative or are they concert films?
No, they're narrative. They're very narrative. Yeah.
Okay. So it's like True Stories, but not like Stop Making Sense.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if there were concert films,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. If there were concert films, my movie would be over. That was the whole explanation. So, okay.
I got some groceries, some peanut butter.
Yeah.
To last a couple of days.
Oh, boy.
Uh-huh. All right. Rowdy Piper, ever the heel, opens us up getting off stage to what sounds like a genuine roar of cheers. Looking rather like fellow looking rather like fellow quote too many names peer Diamond David Lee Roth, he throws his headband literally what I pictured when I came up with this. He throws his headband and other accoutrements at his assistant, reluctantly placating the various people that attempt to thank him.
You get a point bunch for using the word accoutrement.
So. Yeah, I love it. It's one of my faves. Yeah. He kicks some groupies out of his green room and shuts the door. People obviously generally see him as some kind of dick, but we quickly learn that he has crippling physical pain due to years of hard living and jump kicks. Obviously.
too much scatting.
Yep.
The assless chaps cut in under his cheeks. Yeah, yep. We got
the,
you.
The hips and the vocal cords are rough these days. Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense.
He
keep me running.
He immediately grabs several ice packs, pops a whole bunch of pills, and lays on the floor in silence, which I think we can all relate to, let's be honest.
It's true.
All day, every day.
Yeah. His whole persona demands that he play this like high energy, always down to party guy. But besides being literally incapable of doing it anymore, he's come to resent the whole thing because it's now literally killing him. We see many more scenes of him suffering through various public engagements or eating at restaurants.
Zach, would you be willing to say that he lives his life like there's no tomorrow?
I would certainly. Yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah, eating at restaurants while having to take pictures and then hiding away in his limo or the bathroom just for a few fleeting moments of alone time where he doesn't have to put up with the... doesn't have to put the face on. We end on him dropping his bags in a cabin, smiling as we pan out to the vast wilderness in the middle of absolute nowhere, assuming that he's finally gotten a break from his life. So that's like a happy ending-ish.
Yeah, so he's a real Slurms McKenzie.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
But with a happy ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next one.
Keith... Solid Futurama reference.
Yeah. Oftentimes.
Achievement unlocked.
Keith David's
Halo
segment
or whatever.
Oh, we're back. Okay. Keith David's segment begins with someone interviewing him, where the questions all suggest that he's this hyper artistic enigma. And the reporter is desperately trying to pry any info out of him while he's being super evasive, almost to the point of being antagonistic.
Is he being Kanye?
I was about to do my comparison, but like kind of. Kanye's kind of just stupid. I give Keith David more credit than that.
I guess he's not antagonistic. He just like doesn't get it.
Well, he's definitely antagonistic, but not in a fun way.
Like not purposefully.
Yeah. So through some establishing scenes, we learn that he's a sort of Warhol crossed with Prince type character.
Interesting.
Yeah, like he keeps everyone guessing at every turn with his erratic, intentionally mysterious behavior, wherein people presume everything has some deeper artistic meaning, largely because he implies it always. We then, like smash cut, turn to his private life, where we find him sneaking out of a palatial warehouse district loft apartment, only to get into a generic looking car, let's say like a Toyota Camry with a dent in the back bumper, as is customary.
The Camry dent, yeah. This is a real thing.
And driving over the bridge to New Jersey. The garage door shuts.
Over the bridge to New Jersey? He lives in Philly? Why would any artist live in
Philly? No. Over the bridge from the New York City. City to Jersey.
You're showing your colors a little too much there.
That's the only city in the world.
And besides, like, no one wants to go to Camden. Like, everyone understood.
There's a reason why it's free to go to go east on the Walt Whitman Bridge. It costs money to go west.
Fucking
isn't it
time.
The Ben Franklin Bridge?
Both.
The Franklin Bridge? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, it costs to get out of New Jersey because it's a bullshit place.
Ben Franklin is through Philly, and Walt Whitman is the one that goes to Delaware-ish through Pennsylvania.
That's even worse.
Well,
yeah, but if you drive down to Delaware, you get that duty free.
You said the word duty.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We used to buy.
It reminds me
there.
Of a Toblerone that I get at the airport.
Callbacks. All right. The garage door.
Let's do this.
The garage door shuts on a huge, very generic-looking suburban mansion, and we find out that, in actuality, he's just a married father of three who couldn't be more sort of generic, standard middle-aged male in real life. He spends days at a time holed up in this house, spending time with his family, only to eventually return to the city to his other life to play shows and gallivant around, ever stoking the flames of artistic mystery. So he's living this like double life, but it's all a charade, essentially.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I'd like to follow this character more. What else do we see from him?
Not much, turns out. I think that's it.
Well, we only have, 20 minutes, so,
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so
is there going to be, like, a denouement where they all, like, meet up, or...
I was trying to shoehorn that in. I mean, they're all, like, supposed to be, like, the top 10 famous people of all time at this point in history, so, like, they could, but they don't. Yeah.
Yeah, no, gotcha. I kind of like this setup that you're doing with short stories, because I really like a short story collection. So
yeah.
So like the movie Shortcuts.
No. Well.
Well, I mean, that's explicitly what that movie is.
Oh,
but
sure. I don't know that one, but yeah.
It's like that Cortázar novel, Hopscotch.
Yeah. Oh, so I go with the notable one that people who speak English would recognize, but then Seth. You,
to be fair, a non-trivial subset of our audience and or bots do not allegedly speak English, so
fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's playing to them. That is a good choice.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, Meg Foster is a cross between Sherry Lewis and Mr. Rogers. As the most widely revered children's entertainment / musical star in all the lands, she spends her days doing shows and meet and greets and doing various kids' TV shows. As we follow her around, she genuinely seems like the nicest, sweetest possible person one could ever imagine. Like actual Fred Rogers.
Oh, is she going to be like a dominatrix or something?
I can't believe you said that. Stay tuned.
What do you mean? You can't? That was fucking telegraph,
I
man.
Guess. Yeah, dude. Come on. Her nights, however, are quite a bit different.
Yeah.
We see her knock on the... You do this to me every fucking time.
I spent fucking 12 years studying, like, fucking story structure and shit. Of course I do this to you.
I'm not making any, like, huge reaches here, for sure. Yeah. Okay, we see her knock on the stereotypically windowless door in an alley situation, and a bouncer immediately ushers her in. She walks into a dark room and removes her coat, revealing head-to-toe leather. She flicks on the lights, and it's the world's most glorious BDSM dungeon. As it turns out, people get quite a kick out of being abused by female Mr. Rogers, and she's incredibly brutal. She does not charge people. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She does not charge people, as she doesn't need the money, but the application process is particularly rigorous. We find that the only people she takes as clients are those who don't seem to be entirely stand-up people in their own personal lives, so like, you know, people that deserve to get smacked around a little bit. As it turns out, her do-gooder character runs so deep that it only really gets her jimmies rustled if she can torture people who she knows secretly deserve it.
Okay.
Jimmies rustled?
Yeah.
I like that term. It's a good term.
Yeah. Yeah. So we close on a nod to the audience shot of her on the TV show pulling, not her TV show, but like a morning talk show or something, pulling down her pant leg, having realized that her mistress leather outfit she sometimes wears underneath her mom clothes was showing. She looks around, no one seems to notice, and we break into the wheels on the bus as we fade out.
It's very nice. I don't know how we're going to watch the last segment when I'm this hard, but, you know.
Rock fucking hard. Yeah, okay. I think you'll like this one. I actually wrote this one first because it spoke to me the most as myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
This will definitely things give us I an know insight. About Zach. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Computers, ska music, drinking problems.
Wait, ska music comes as number two?
No, in my heart, it's number one.
Okay. Yeah. That's what
no,
I was hoping
no,
for.
Like, no distinct order.
Yeah. You know. No. I mean, sure, you have sure, so sure. many Mighty Mighty Boston's albums.
I do have between 13 and 14 of them. That's true.
I can't. Yeah. Last time it was 14 and 15, but all right. Oh,
well, I lose count. If once you're past like 8, it doesn't even matter anymore. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't even imagine what it would be like for you to knock on wood. But.
I mean, to get through all of them, it takes 24 hours.
This is really a catch 22.
Kiss me nice.
Okay. I don't think we should give the band Catch-22 that much credit.
Oh, I definitely think we should. They're wonderful. Friend of the show, Jess, is like top five favorite bands, I think. Yeah.
Did they do that shitty song I hate, Constantine?
No, that's an entirely different genre. And
no, band. That's something corporate.
Yes, yeah. Correct. Yeah. Okay. Derek George T-double-O-M-B-S Tombs. In a conspicuous nod to his real-life level of fame is a keyboard player that no one gives any recognition or respect to despite the general fame of his actual band.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, the Cuervo Jones.
Yes, correct.
The fine Colombian.
Yep.
Makes tonight a wonderful thing. He's all Steely Dan lyrics.
Yeah, one could assume, yes. Oh, the forever fart. No.
Oh, boy. Friend of the show, Eva and I.
She especially hates Steely Dan.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No kidding.
I'm aware.
Okay, frustrated as a permanent background player to the charismatic dual frontman in his band, he grows increasingly...
Like Steely Dan!
Oh, fuck. Oh, no, I did it. Oh, god damn it.
Dude, we fucking knew it, like, a minute ago.
Fagan and Becker. Oh, shit.
This was not intentional. I didn't know there were two frontmen. I don't listen to Steely Dan, because they're not very good, in my opinion.
Well, you'd be wrong, but all right.
Oh, we're so antagonistic.
He grows increasingly resentful of their fame.
Hey, you know that thing you love? I hate it.
It sucks, all of it. One night, he slinks away unnoticed after a show to get some food. At the fast food joint, he realizes he's surrounded by people.
Oh, I hope he went to Steak and Shake, because that's the best place in the middle of the night.
Sure, yeah, that'll work.
No, y'all don't have Steak and Shakes out where you're from?
Hmm. No, I don't. I've only been to one once. It was... I remember it being good.
I think mine was in the Midwest. Passable. Isn't that a Midwest thing?
Yeah, it's a Midwest thing. Yeah. The global headquarters are in Indianapolis, I believe. So, you know.
Okay. Here's a serious question. Does Arby's deliver?
No, but you can get like a Postmates-esque kind of company to deliver it to you for about $20. So
yeah,
let's say
it might be worth it.
Effectively,
diarrhea worth $20? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm tiki'd out of my fucking mind right now, so it might be.
Oh, boy. I mean, you should write in the instructions, if you come with anything less than 30 packs of horsey sauce, I'm going to throw it in your fucking face, and I'm going to kick your car.
I want a Big Montana. I know they don't call them that anymore, but you better get them to find an old fucking wrapper.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
Weird and gross.
All right.
All right.
Yeah.
Keyboard, Tombs,
keyboard,
fast food.
Tombs, fast food. So he gets there at the place. He realizes he's surrounded by people that were just at the show, but literally no one notices him. After brooding in anger for a bit.
Bass player.
Yeah, I was going to go with bass player, but like keyboard player seems sadder somehow. Yeah. After a bit of brooding, furiously, he overturns an entire fixture filled with the lids and the straws and the coffee creamers and whatnot. And then people finally take notice of him, but still, even then, no one seems to recognize that he's part of the band and famous-ish.
Aww.
Realizing that this act was rather cathartic
for
him.
Sounds like a real Tombs.
Right? Realizing that this act was rather cathartic, he spends a whole night walking around causing lots of low-stakes mayhem. Like, same kind of shit.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent.
The Cuervo Jones. Fine Colombian makes tonight a wonderful place.
Oh boy,
no
one this likes is this. Tedious.
No one likes this at all. I'm so close.
That's good. Let me encourage you some more.
He spends a whole night walking around causing lots of low stakes mayhem. As time moves forward, the acts escalate to the point where he's moved on from a largely victimless crime situation to actual burglaries and borderline hostage situations where he doesn't...
Like what we almost did that one night.
Wait, what?
Yeah, remember it? When you broke into
the B&E. The B&E.
Yeah.
Well, if they're friends, I feel like... You could probably explain that to a cop. Cops are really cool. They totally get it. That'd be fun.
Oh, yeah, the KK cops? Yeah, they're super cool.
KK cops. You're giving too much away.
Oh,
my fucking town they are.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So he doesn't like take anything or like actually hurt anybody, but rather, again, sort of intends only to cause sort of superficial trouble and then escape. Ironically, this lack of respect or recognition both fuels his internal rage while simultaneously enabling him to get away with these crimes. No one close to him suspects anything, and no one in the real world recognizes him because he's always under the radar. So finally, he gets caught, and we skip ahead a bit, and we end up with him watching the TV in prison, yelling like a lunatic about how the nightly news didn't even mention that he was part of the band.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Oh, man.
That's kind of...
So,
I think you got me with that one.
Yeah. Yeah, that felt like my favorite one, yeah.
I like that one a lot.
Yeah, the whole thing is, it's sort of a voyeuristic look into the juxtaposition of, like, public and private life, and, like, you know, like, fame is a weird thing in our culture these days, but there's this other side to people that's really human, and I think that's way more interesting. Yeah,
yeah, that everybody has a public persona and a private persona. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I get it.
One might say that everybody's... I was going to do The Stranger by Billy Joel, but I forgot all the words.
Captain Jack will get you high.
B minus for effort.
Just sit at home and masturbate.
Seth. Should we tell Zach who?
Yeah, so
Derek.
So Zach.
Who Derek George Toombs is?
So Zach, we'll get into the real movie now. We have something to tell you about the cast.
Is this like the fucking fourth week in a row or fourth cycle in a row with this shit?
So,
do you guys hate me? Do you guys talk about me while I'm not here?
What's the deal? We just love to have jokes. what was that last name that you?
A real person? This is not a real person.
Oh, no, it's a real person. So
it's a real person.
Yeah, yeah. So what was it? Derek?
Derek with
Toombs?
Two R's and a CK. George
T-O-O-M-B-S. Do you want to know what Derek George Toombs' full name is?
Yeah, would you like to know that?
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Well, his full name is...
Yeah, Roderick.
Roderick George Toombs, also known as Rowdy Roderick.
Oh, you motherfuckers!
Rowdy Roddy Piper's real name is Roderick George Toombs.
Holy shit. That's a crazy, like, Elizabethan name. Why would any human in current times have that name?
He's Canadian, so I can only assume that, like, he kissed Anne with two E's one time.
That's true.
And, like, yeah.
Sure. Oh, man, for a second I thought, like, Roderick was somehow, like, a lady's name, and it was going to be Ronda Rousey or something. That was very exciting. Okay.
No, oh, that would have been crazy.
Whew. Okay.
Nope.
I mean, still really good. Well done, fellas.
That Derek Toombs is Rowdy Roddy Piper. So we gave you same actor twice.
Yeah, that's great. All right, so in this one, he cuts his hair, I guess, and, like, I don't know, loses a bunch of weight. Yeah. Like, the machinist?
Oh, and yours. Yeah. I got you.
So he can do both. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So he looks different. Sure. Yeah, I got you. Yeah. I got you.
Great. Yeah. Love it. Perfect.
okay. Zach, would you like the IMDb?
I would. I have a bit of a confession to make on this one, too. I knew about this because I have gone down a Von Erich primed nightmare wrestling hole on Wikipedia hundreds of times. And I feel like I ended up on Rowdy Rowdy's page a couple times, and I knew he was in this, and I knew it. I think, like, it's kind of not thought of well. I could be making that up.
Oh, no, it's pretty liked.
It's well received, yeah.
Oh, all right. Mm-hmm. Well, then I don't know it all. Yeah. Well, lay it on me.
Okay.
He was in two movies.
Oh.
And the other one is very poorly received, and it's called Hell Comes to
Frogtown.
Oh,
man, Hell Frogs. I love that movie.
That's
so
fucking
stupid.
Stupid title, for sure. Yeah.
Well, it's a stupid movie, but I love it.
Makes sense.
Well, let's not talk about it more, because it sounds like maybe we could do a repeat Roddy
with
Zach here.
Yeah, if you gave me Derek George Toombs again, I probably wouldn't remember. You could do that whole fucking thing again.
A regular repeat Roddy.
So, the IMDb one-sentence summary is, a drifter discovers a pair of sunglasses that allow him to wake up to the fact that aliens have taken over the Earth.
Okay. This is... Was
this,
I will preface this,
Zach, by saying this is both the most and least accurate one sentence summary I could ever imagine.
Yeah, no, it's true.
That's exciting.
It's
okay.
So crazy was this in... how all over the place it is.
So there are definitive movies where there is a non-actor or actress, let's say a sports star or something, and they're like, we're going to make a movie around this person and it's going to suck. But it's going to make money because this person is independently famous of the music.
Space Jam? Are you just talking about Space Jam right
yeah.
now?
Yeah. Oh, let's go Space Jam. Sure. Yeah.
It kind of takes the exact opposite approach.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it takes itself seriously, is what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it really does.
That is very exciting. Okay.
It's kind of a confusing movie. Let's be honest.
Can I give you a deeper breakdown?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, so I would like to preface this with two things. One, it takes a very long time for this movie to get going. There is so much setup.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
This is the
really
80s,
right? It's really aggressive about the setup. Let's be honest.
This is
what
the
was
80s.
That you said, Zach?
This is the
80s? Like 89.
88.
Like late. Okay.
88.
It's 88. All right,
so it's not so early that I would expect such a thing, but close.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
The second thing I want to mention,
but it really works. The fact that it takes a third of the movie to set up is like, it really works for me.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and this is that leads me to the second thing. This movie follows a three act structure to a T.
Yeah.
It is 90 minutes long. It is 90 minutes.
You
and it is
mother
three acts
fuckers.
To a T.
Why do I never get to watch these cocksuck movies?
Setup is the first 30 minutes. 32 minutes, I believe.
31, 40, I think, is the setup to the movie.
Yep. The second act ends at, what, 62?
61, 40.
Okay, yeah, again. So, like, it really...
And it's 92 minutes long.
It really, really does a 30 structure, and it is beautiful. It's a well-composed movie, so fuck you, Zach.
Yeah, I know. I'm just gonna... Okay, whatever any movie that I have to watch for the foreseeable future comes in at, I'm just gonna cut it to 90 by randomly snipping out parts in the middle. Like, chunks of 15,
No, you should
minutes.
Just end it at 90. Just like whatever the movie is, and then you'd be like, I didn't have a conclusion. I don't understand.
I feel like I stopped at the second.
Eventually, we'll make you watch Lawrence of Arabia, and you'll be like, I don't know, there's a lot of sand. I don't know.
Sure, yeah. All right, yeah, what you got, Lee? Tell me the things.
Okay, so Roddy Piper is Rowdy.
Put some Roddy respect Piper. On his name, Jesus.
Yeah, dude, yeah, don't be such a bitch about it.
So Rowdy Roddy is a blue collar workman who also happens to be kind of a drifter.
Yeah, that checks
and
out.
He ends up in I think it's explicitly mentioned that's L.A.
It is
like,
L.A.
Very,
and they like they talk about some L.A. stuff and like. In the opening scene, I guess I was supposed to recognize the skyline, but I definitely didn't because it was the L.A. skyline. So like fuck that. Like,
sure.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
So he ends up in L.A. It's the late 80s, Reagan economics, and there's a lot of, like, middle class, lower middle class people suffering. He gets a construction job. He's friends with Keith David. Keith David, like, brings him into this, like...
They don't trust each other, but they're like, oh, we're both working men, and, you know, like, a working man's gotta work with another working man. And they eventually become friends, but it is kind of a plot point.
Sure, okay.
Keith David brings him to this, like, camp that he's been staying... It's like a Hooverville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, very definitely, yeah.
Everybody helps care for each other, and everybody chips in, like, very... Very kind of Marxist almost kind of society they're trying to set up.
Are they like,
but out of necessity rather than belief?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're like extremely destitute if they're like living.
No,
in
it's
a
not
camp,
that they're extremely destitute. It's the fact that like the rest of society is so oppressive and like just trying to live in L.A. at this time. Like, I mean, there's a huge, like, even now, there's a huge homeless population in Los Angeles, right? Yeah. And so it's like just it happened to be that these people that are trying to make the best of it happen to form a community together on kind of the outskirts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
It is, for lack of a better word, kind of Marxist. Like,
but we're siding with them because it's endearing, because they're making the best of it, sort of.
Well, I mean, they seem to be genuine people.
Okay.
Yeah, we're siding with them because they're clearly like people who are working hard to try to make their way.
Like,
in the world.
In fact, like Keith David is explicitly like, you know what, I do the best that I can, and I work every single day, and this is the best that I can afford. So. Right.
This is the best that I can afford. I didn't take it out for air. That the whole thing. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So he gets inducted into like this community. And he notices that there's like some weird TV signals coming through talking about like people being oppressed and brainwashed in a weird way.
Oh.
And then about 30 minutes in, he finds a pair of sunglasses that allow him to see that some of the people in this society are aliens.
Would we call this a Chekhov's gun? Is that
No, the sunglasses hadn't come up before. No.
Am I using that correctly?
Not how a Chekhov's gun works.
And they pay off immediately, so
yeah. No, there's no like delayed sort of thing.
Okay. The fact that that is the pivotal sort of prop in this is just wonderful. That's very funny.
Yeah. I mean,
so
I think
also while
I think
while
if anything, our Chekhov's gun is Meg Foster, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I think.
Oh,
so.
Oh, curious.
Yeah, uh-huh. I agree. Also, he can see not only who is an actual human versus who's an alien. He could see like all of the advertising is changed. Like when he puts the glasses on, like you know, are you familiar with the Obey graffiti?
Yeah.
So that's based on this movie.
Really? Oh, weird.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, it's this like is a really pivotal thing, yeah.
Huh. That's like a skateboard company, I think, now? Or like a shirt company or something? Or whatever, yeah.
Well, now it's super capitalist, which is kind of ironic.
Sure.
So, he puts on the glasses, like, you know, all the advertising is like, Obey, or like, the actual money says this is your god on it.
Or it's like,
Marry and Reproduce.
Okay. Like, he looks at a sexy lady, like, poster, and it says Marry and Reproduce when he puts on the sunglasses. This movie has, I would say, the antithesis to subtlety.
Okay. If you cast a wrestler as your main actor, then
we'll talk about that in a second.
It's
the
antithesis to subtlety, but not in the same way that Paul Verhoeven would do it. It's somehow less subtle.
Yeah. Okay. But yet still kind of effective. Like I still really enjoyed this, even though it was like just smashing me in the face with it. So
right, because it's so purposeful at the same time. Yeah. Anyway,
unlike Paul Verhoeven.
Right, yeah, true. RoboCop, a story of the Christ. That's a joke about RoboCop and Ben-Hur.
Yep. Just like the last movie we talked about, which was a story of the Christ.
Sure enough.
That's true.
Sure enough.
Real passionate one.
You'll watch it
soon. He gets these sunglasses, and then he starts... Like, literally, he puts sunglasses on, he walks into a bank, and then with a shotgun, and he starts blasting people.
Oh, like, yeah. No, it goes from 0 to 50 in Fast and the Furious movie. Like, it's
Zach, are you familiar with the line of dialogue, I came here to chew bubblegum and kick some ass?
Duke Nukem, yes.
And I'm
course.
All out of bubblegum.
That's a Duke Nukem line, as far as I'm concerned, yes.
Yeah, it's from this movie.
Originally.
Interesting. Did not know that.
Okay. And it was an ad lib.
Yeah.
Wow. And with Rowdy? That's funny.
Yeah.
Good for him.
It was out of nowhere.
A line that he was working on to incorporate into one of his promos, and he never was able to use it.
Certainly.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he turns so quick because he realizes that the entire world is fake, and he's just like, well, fuck it.
Right.
Well, so, and one of the great things about the movie, I think, is this whole second sequence involves him, well, for one thing, he kidnaps Meg Foster's character and tries to get her to put on the glasses. Mm-hmm. We don't know that he is actually seeing these things.
Oh, weird. Okay, interesting.
The whole second sequence is this guy running amok.
Like, just being a total asshole. Like, he's like, he shoots up a bank. Again, focusing on what he perceives to be the aliens. Yeah. But no one else can recognize that.
Well,
and,
I mean... But, okay, no one else in the movie can recognize it, or you as the audience has not yet?
No one else in the movie.
In the movie. The way that they do it, which I think is kind of artful, is that when he puts the sunglasses on, everything becomes black and white. So you know that it's his perception when what we see is black and white.
They also make a point to say that when he wears the glasses too long, it gives him like a really bad headache, and he feels like he's coming down from drugs.
Yeah.
Well, sure.
Yeah. So it's a holdover to our last episode.
Yeah.
Where,
sure enough,
we're like, nobody really understands how drugs work, but it's cool.
When you take drugs, the world turns black and white. I think, right?
Yeah. Okay. Let's go with that. That's my experience.
Yeah.
What can I say?
So for this whole second part of the movie, we're sure that he's correct because the movie's about him.
Yeah.
But no one else experiences this.
Right.
Yeah.
So then about 55 minutes in, we get a fight scene between him.
God, this fucking fight scene. Jesus.
Between him and Keith David. And it's a fight scene that lasts 5 minutes and 20 seconds.
Yeah, but it seems like so much longer.
Longer than the five entire minutes.
Yeah,
Zach, are you a South Park fan?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah,
remember the episode Cripple Fight?
Oh God, no, boy. Okay, yep. Go on.
So the fight scene in that episode where Timmy and Jimmy fight is literal shot for shot recreation of this fight scene.
Oh boy, I didn't realize that, but I see it now. Yeah,
it's sad and slow and weird, and no one's actually fighting.
Oh yeah, okay. there's parts where like he's just like where Keith David is just kicking Piper in the nuts for like 30 seconds.
Cool. That's a long time.
But the whole thing is, like, the purpose for this fight scene is Rowdy, like, after he gets pushed out of a window by Meg and then, like, wanders around L.A. for a while, he's trying to find any kind of ally. And he knows that he and Keith David, like, have some kind of friendship, even if it is a little... strange.
Yeah.
And he's like, Keith David, look through these sunglasses. Look through these sunglasses, Keith David. And then they fight over whether or not Keith David will put on the fucking sunglasses.
Oh, not okay. It makes more sense realistically that he puts them on and is like, what the fuck did you do to me? Like, not that he wouldn't put them on.
No. It's that he won't even wear them until after the 5 minute and 40 second? 30 second?
I believe it's 520.
Yeah, 5 minute and 20 second fight out of a 92 minute movie.
I feel like I've watched actual wrestling matches that have taken
super...
less time than that.
Oh, certainly have. Certainly have.
Super upsetting, and they do wrestling moves in it. Like,
there's a couple back body drops. And,
cool.
Yeah.
I think
there's a Sambo suplex in there.
Yeah, oh, perfect. Yeah, there definitely is, even though I don't know what that is, but I can get it through context. it just goes on for way too long, and they're fighting in garbage too. It's so weird.
The best part about this fight scene is starts at like 55-56 minutes, and by the time it ends and Keith David has the sunglasses on, it is 2/3 of the way through the movie. Mm-hmm. It is the perfect act break of the movie.
That's very good.
And
we can pivot entirely. Yeah, and now we're in a shared world. Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah,
and then they discover an underworld of resistance fighters who then immediately get massacred by the police.
Oh yeah, they sure do. Well, Rodney King. Okay, that was 3 years after that. Whatever.
So
Seth
I was making
brought this up.
Yeah. Okay.
No, seriously. Like, it really, really echoes the Rodney King riots to me. Yeah. Granted, it was 3.5 years prior.
Yeah.
But like, the racial tension and the socioeconomic tension and the police, like brutalizing people and all sorts of things. Like it clearly, and this is a time that, like, I didn't live in California. I don't really know it from first person, but like it seems like this movie was mirroring the zeitgeist of the time, where they were like, holy shit, right. This is untenable. Specifically in Los Angeles. Yep. And this was the net result. And it was weird to see art imitating life a little bit later like this.
Yep. I mean, it was very systemic, so it was certainly going on in 1988 or 89, whenever they filmed this.
Yeah, before the 92 riots, right.
Yep.
So
weird.
Oh, it was weird, and it made me very introspective about a lot of things while I was watching it. It's like, I don't want to be introspective right now. I'm watching a goddamn Rowdy Roddy Piper movie, but like there's still like a lot of issues that are like making me feel about a lot of stuff.
That seems good, if anything. I mean, good for them for making a topical movie.
Yeah. So during this whole sequence, they run into their old boss on the construction site, who is a member of the human elite, the people that the aliens trust to help them succeed.
Oh.
Who then gives them a tour of the everything.
It's not their boss. No.
Oh, I thought it was their boss.
No. The guy who gives them the tour of all of the alien elite after they escape from one of the cop massacres using alien technology.
They escape from L.A.
Yeah.
I escaped from L.A. Yep, of course.
It was one of the people who lived in the homeless camp but was obsessed with the television. He was...
Oh, it was that guy. Shit, you're right. It was that guy.
His name is like Buck or something. I don't remember the actor's name, but I feel like his name in all of the credits is like... Oh, George Buck Flower is his name.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that is an actor's name. So.
Yeah, and he was in the kind of drifter camp in the Hooverville. And, like, was obsessed with the television. Like, there was still power in the Hooverville. And, like, when the anti-alien, signals were coming through, he specifically was like, shut this fucking shit off. Like,
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It is that guy.
So it was a man who was ostensibly a homeless person who had no job, who then joined... You know, for lack of a better word, the winning side. And he's giving them a tour wearing a goddamn tuxedo and shit.
Hey, okay.
And it's like the craziest exposition dump you've ever seen. It's like a four-minute exposition dump.
It's so gratuitous and it's wonderful. Like, I love it.
The entire like plan of the aliens and what, like, how they accomplish it, and like they want to. They global warming gets wrapped in as it's them acclimatizing the Earth to what they're used to.
Yeah. Early. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Again, they were ahead of their time.
Just a quick note. I don't like the term global warming.
Climate change gets roped in.
Yeah. I mean, like, I know it, especially at this point, the conceptualization was that everything was heating up and we were all concerned about methane and whatnot. And this is a thing that I emphasize with my students as well, is that I don't like the term global warming because it is a misnomer and it's not accurate. And the preferred term is climate change.
That's fair.
That's just me.
You are correct. You are correct.
That is just me harping on my one particular button because I used to work in this sort of stuff.
Yes.
But I am both a linguist and a environmental scientist. So just global warming is just a hot button for me. But it was used in this film. They used the term global warming. So you're perfectly right. I just wanted to let our listeners know that I'm a total asshole.
So anyway,
all right, Al Gore, we get it.
Lets them in on like pretty much any conspiracy
finger
theory
guns
that you can come up with from the late '80s is related to these aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And then It's all being broadcast through one of the local TV stations. Rowdy Roddy and Keith David kill a bunch of dudes who are aliens, and they break in, and they end up making it to the top of the roof and Meg Foster.
Yeah, but before then, it's like, did you guys ever play those, like, arcade video games where they had, like, guns?
Time crisis.
Yeah. Where you turn a corner and there's people to shoot.
Yeah, no.
But they never get the drop on
you. But this entire like 10 to 15 minute sequence of Keith David and Rowdy Roddy Piper walking through with submachine guns was exactly time crisis. Like, you're definitely just walking down a hallway and then, some soldiers pop out and then like pull up their guns and you have to shoot them.
Yeah.
And it was very nostalgic for me.
Yeah.
So earlier at the big, like, meeting of the resistance, we find out that Meg Foster, the woman who threw Piper out of a window, was part of the resistance the whole time.
Okay.
And she also works at this TV station, and they find her because he wants to, like, help her.
Yeah, sure.
Because he's got a giant boner for her.
Sure.
Yeah.
As the only woman in the movie.
Yep, of course.
But then as they're, like, trying to make it up to the roof to destroy the satellite dish, it turns out that she's actually part of the alien group, even though she's a human.
Certainly.
And she kills Keith David, and then she's gonna kill...
Yeah, she, like, execution-style kills Keith David.
Yeah, like, right in the fucking head.
She just shoots him in the goddamn head in a stairwell. It's super fucked up.
Okay.
We don't see it, but it's implied.
We kind of see it. Mm-hmm. And Roddy's about to destroy the satellite, and she comes up, and she's like, I'll destroy you. And he's like, nah, I'm Roddy Piper. And he kills her, and then he destroys the satellite. He destroys the satellite, and then he gets killed. And, like, we don't know if they succeeded, but we know that they stopped part of it.
No, what we do know is that the satellite was providing interference to all of the aliens to make them appear human. And as soon as he blew up the satellite dish, it meant that all of the, like, weird They Live aliens suddenly looked like weird They Live aliens in their awesome
rubber masks.
Yeah,
so the last shot of the movie...
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They had Buckaroo Banzai level rubber.
It is amazing. I want one. I want one to wear to your wedding, Zach.
The last shot of this movie is a topless woman on top of a gent.
The first time that there are boobies in this movie is this last scene
doing an intercourse with this gentleman, and she looks down and she looks terrified, and then They Live Alien says to her, "What is it, baby? What's wrong?" And then, like, the movie's over.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
It's pretty fun. I like it.
I will say, you described a lot of points in which this almost sounds like a well thought out story. Like, am I wrong about that?
It's good.
Like, it has all the hallmarks of, like, good storytelling, which is weird.
Yep. Okay. So let's get back into it. Lee, you got stuff?
Yeah. So seamlessly, I'm going to talk about the production of this movie.
Seamless.
So, Zach, really, really quick. Who do you think directed this movie?
I mean, apropos of nothing, let's say Rowdy Roddy Piper.
No, it wasn't. Let me tell you who scored the movie, and then maybe you can
was it John Carpenter?
It was.
Oh my Carpenter. Fucking god! That is inconceivable, unfucking believable.
Oh, you mean my favorite director?
Yeah. Did he also direct this? There's no way he directed
this. He sure did.
He also directed this. Yeah.
That is...
Another John Carpenter for the Zach Compendium.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's...
God damn it. I went down the list the other... after I did The Thing or something. I don't even remember. I went down the list and, like, downloaded all the ones that seemed plausible and somehow missed this entirely.
I think this is your sixth John Carpenter. No, this is like
it might be
my
fourth
Carpenter.
14th. I don't. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, it's pretty great. We're pretty happy that you also had this like loophole.
It's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Rick Dickless. So Carpenter.
It's a Carpenter movie. A lot of people consider it his best movie.
No, I don't know. That can't be true.
I don't.
Yeah. No, it's not even close. It's too heavy-handed, I think. For his
this
point.
Movie.
Yeah.
This movie is very clearly and then like explicitly through interviews with Carpenter. It is a critique of Reaganomics.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because it's the whole, all the aliens in the movie are rich people getting richer. Yeah, all the people in the movie, in the resistance, are poor people waking up to the fact that they are being oppressed.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is kind of a point though, with Rowdy Roddy.
Yes, it is. So, I think I have some exact wording here that I think is extra good.
Excellent.
Yeah, so Rowdy Roddy had no goddamn idea, apparently, what this movie was about.
I mean, he was a fledgling wrestler at the time, so yeah, I'm not surprised.
Well, he was a world-famous wrestler.
In 88,
he's probably the second to third most famous wrestler.
Really?
In 88, was a big deal. Like, Rowdy Roddy had star power to this.
At this time, he was probably the biggest villain in the WWF. Yeah. He had headlined a WrestleMania at this point.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to read this directly from the IMDb trivia.
Okay.
And I'm going to read the next thing also directly, just to juxtapose Roddy Piper's reality versus reality's reality.
I'm already not surprised. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so here we go. For years after for years after the film's release, even on the movie's DVD commentary, Roddy Piper maintained that the film was based on an actual incident in the 1950s in which a company had manufactured a TV that planted subliminal messages into women's brains, instructing them to make extravagant purchases. Piper was unaware that the, and this is in quotes, documentary he had seen, L'Affaire Brunswick, was in fact a short comedic film.
Yep. I mean, head injuries, that makes sense. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, he does have so many concussions.
Yeah.
So let's bookend this with this fact here. On an episode of Monster Vision in 1997, Roddy Piper mentioned... Do you guys remember Monster Vision with Joe Bob Briggs?
You could just stop there. Yeah.
No, because that sounds like a cable show. And it was...
It was a cable show.
Yeah, see, that's why. It wasn't Hercules The Legendary Journeys or whatever.
Or Xena Warrior Princess.
Yeah, on CBS after the...
Also, speaking of Xena, check out Let's Write an Episode with our friend Tommy.
Sure enough.
You certainly should. Yeah. But as a formative period in my life, I only watched the local news and then the national news, and then whatever the hell was after it. So I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
All right, well, let me continue. On an episode of Monster Vision in 1997, Roddy Piper mentioned that John Carpenter had wanted him to discuss the film's political subtext, which was critical of Reaganomics, while doing promotion for the film. However, he decided that because he was in the U.S. on a green card, he should not discuss American politics.
Wow.
He also noted that he had rather liked President Reagan and didn't agree with the film's politics.
Yeah.
So basically,
that makes a lot of
Piper
sense. Yeah.
Made a movie about aliens invading the Earth and using subliminal messages to control them, and not only thought that it was based on a true story, but also didn't pick up on the entire film's political message, which was incredibly heavy-handed.
I think he didn't want to get involved in American politics because he's on a green card. Great job, Roddy. Also, agreed with Reaganomics. Oh, not such a great job, Roddy. So, there it seems like a theme in his life in general. Yeah. I hear a cricket.
I mean,
somebody has a cricket.
That's me. That's outside my window.
Okay, cool.
No, it's also happening here. So there are crickets everywhere. Yeah.
Tis the season.
Crickets all have been this piece. Yep. All
right. Does anybody have any other stuff, or should we do the thing?
Let me look at my diggity notes. No.
No. Oh, that acid wash, though.
Oh, lots of acid wash jeans in this
Jordache. Love that. Love
yeah,
that.
Lots of acid wash. There's like a...
Up in my butthole.
There's a gross nail commercial that really fucked me up.
Yeah, there's a couple commercials, like, because some of the movie takes place, like, on TV screens. So there's a couple, like, really weird, like, super materialistic commercials that also seem totally reasonable, like, in the context of the movie.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. But yeah. It really grossed me out. And then the Monopoly Man.
The scene at the end where they talk about John Carpenter.
Oh, that was
what?
Good.
Whoa.
Yeah, so, like... After Rowdy Roddy explodes the signal that is, like, covering up all of our awesome, sexy, weird, fleshy aliens.
Certainly.
Very blue and veiny.
Yeah, they're quite blue and veiny, which apparently I find sexy because I said it a second ago.
You are a human, so that makes
sense. I agree. Humans should be beige and oh man, I love clothes.
I eat things from time to time. That's
yeah. No, I definitely use the same place that I output my vocal. And auditory inputs as well as the, like, I just love putting nutrients in there.
You struggled through that like a newfound alien. That was perfect.
Yep.
Yeah.
don't forget about how much you enjoy oral genital massage.
Yeah, no, no.
Putting, of course.
I enjoy
waste producing organs into your food consuming.
Yeah, no, no. I very much enjoy the period in which people are excreting certain biological waste. That region, that whole region, I enjoy it very much. Having that genitals vaguely near my mouth hole where I definitely ingest nutrients, I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Oh god. Boy. Guys, I don't know about you, but wow, I just came.
Yeah,
so.
I've been rock hard since Roddy Piper. I don't even know. Yeah.
Oh god, my couch is ruined. Yeah.
Oh no, but I sleep on that couch, Lee. Oh my god.
By the way, I have to invite you to Thanksgiving, so, like, you know.
Oh, fuck. No, every all single right. time I'm down where you live, I sleep on that couch. Oh boy.
Well. Yep.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So,
yeah. Human cum.
Wait, we had some points that I wanted to cover.
Did we?
Maybe. God only knows. I can't wait to fucking edit this. It's going to be a fucking
oh,
nightmare.
God, fucking Sloop John B up in this.
Oh boy, my grandfather and me. No, the evil rich guy at the end on the, like, moon base. It was clearly the Monopoly Man.
Couldn't even get through it.
Nope. No, Lee, remember the moon base guy?
Yeah, no, I remember. I watched the movie.
Yeah. It's the Monopoly Man.
We need, I think we just need to rate this movie.
Let's just fuck it. Do you want to see the IMDb rating?
I would Zach. Love. I would
okay.
Love.
It's a 7.3 with 90,000 votes.
Oh, yeah. Fucking, that is surprising.
So oddly enough, this movie was the number one movie in the country the week it came out, and then it was out of theaters within 2 weeks.
Really?
Whoa.
I wasn't aware of that.
John Carpenter has suggested, like, a weird, like, his movie has an inherently anti-capitalist theme.
Maybe.
Mm.
Oh, wait, it has a very, very explicit anti-capitalist theme. Well,
it very much does.
So, Zach, Rowdy Piper.
Libertarian.
Yeah, Rowdy Piper has no goddamn idea what the hell was happening.
Yeah, that it sounds like it was just very miscast. But, like, again, I thought it was... totally a goof movie and a cult favorite, but
It is a cult favorite. Performance wise, I don't know that it's a goof. Piper works very well.
Right. Yeah. Well, and no, then I think when, I think when John Carpenter very, very came well. Into the mix, now it makes a lot more sense. Yeah.
Like, yeah, but also that's crazy, like, so Lee sent me this tidbit earlier today where he was like, "Oh, every leading man possible was supposedly cast for this movie."
Oh,
yeah. No, Lee, talk go about on. That a little bit.
So
Jack Nicholson, Robert De Niro. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, here are a few of the names that showed up. Okay, so. Alec Baldwin, Michael Biehn, Brian Bosworth, Jeff Bridges, Bruce Campbell, Tom Cruise, Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson, Tommy Lee Jones, Michael Keaton, Christopher Lambert, Stephen Lang, Dolph Lundgren, Michael Madsen, Bill Paxton, Ron Perlman, Arnold Schwarzenegger, okay. Sylvester Hang Stallone, on. Patrick Swayze, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Bruce Willis, all considered for the same
Okay,
role.
Well, all right, okay. Let's
and
say
Rowdy Roddy
make...
Piper got it.
Well, sure. Okay. Let's decide tomorrow that I decide to make a movie. Yeah, I would consider all those people, but I don't fucking get a choice in it.
That's exactly the thing that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's a thing that I see happen a lot in, like, low-budget movies that are made by actual studios, is the claim is that they auditioned all these people.
This is a Boondock Saints situation is what this is. Yeah. This is, yeah, like, well, I mean, it's John Carpenter, so not really, but, like, that was one where that, like, they thought, like, this is going to be fucking crazy. And then they, quote, considered all those people. And then, obviously, like, their agents never even responded to the...
Right, it's like, oh, we considered Brad Pitt, but Norman Reedus, before he was famous, was clearly the best choice.
Yeah, I mean, we were going to have Brad Pitt on the podcast, but... bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, it was a studio movie, but they didn't have a lot of money. It was very successful in a very limited time.
What was the John Carpenter directly before and directly after this? Was he, like, past his prime? I mean, it doesn't matter,
I don't feel comfortable telling you those things.
Was he past his prime? Was this, like, too
late? No,
this is right in the middle.
Oh,
this
okay.
was toward the end of the John Carpenter, like, that we... explicitly no.
Yeah, the good bits. Yeah.
But I don't think it was, like, at the end of his like, I don't know how to phrase it, but, like, he had several big time movies
that
came out.
Yeah. So
after.
This was 1988 and then, like, in 1996 you have Escape from LA in 90.
And there's several movies in between that. Yeah.
Yeah, in 1994 you have In the Mouth of Madness, The Fog,
which is a great movie if you haven't seen it.
Yeah. Ghosts of Mars all the way in 2001. Like, I mean, like, Big Trouble in Little China was literally 2 years prior to this, so that was 1986.
Oh, okay,
which is arguably his biggest budget movie ever.
Yeah,
sure.
Our famed faking movies, The Starman, starring Jeff Bridges, was similar. Yeah. That was 1984, so that was 4 years prior to this.
All right, so he was still in his prime, certainly.
He was definitely in the middle of his studio
middle
career.
Middle to decline, I would say, because, like, Halloween 3, that Ooh, hilarious well. Stupid movie was
yeah. Well, I mean, he only directed the first one, but, you know.
Yeah, it was 1982, that sort of thing.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. So what y'all thinks about this?
So Seth, do you have the numbers up for this movie?
Yes, I do. The IMDb score is
7.3.
Yeah,
7.3. Definitely already did it. Yep.
Yep.
Oh, we did?
Yep.
About 20 minutes ago.
Yep.
Well, you go fuck yourself.
Lee, you want to give some opinions about these versions?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, I think it's been established pretty clearly on Faking Movies that John Carpenter is my favorite director, even though, politically, as he is a libertarian, I
Ooh.
Find him despicable.
Wait, is he one of the shitty ones, or one of the, like, kind
well,
of
so
okay
I'm not
ones?
Sure.
Yeah, because,
like,
especially in this movie, he's a little more socialist-leaning.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, he clearly hates Reagan, and, like, I can get behind
that
every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is often considered one of his best movies, and I guess it is kind of
okay.
Like, structure wise, it maybe is one of his best movies, but I don't think it's one of his best movies.
Okay.
I would say this is maybe a 7.
Not bad. Yeah, fair, okay. Fair. Okay.
Yeah. Zach, your series of musical vignettes. I really wish something had tied them together at the end. Although yeah. I really loved your Diamond Dave. I really loved your Keith David being Prince.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a 6.5.
Ouch. Okay. All right. That's okay. I mean, I usually fall into this trap. That's fine. That's fine.
Honestly, that final movie you did where the fucking keyboard player for Steely Dan gets arrested, if you had just made that the whole movie, you'd be getting a much better score.
Yeah. So. 10, 10, 10. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
No, I mean,
The Quavo
Jones. Nope. I'm just going to...
A character in Escape from L.A., another John Carpenter
yep,
movie.
Yep.
The Fun Columbia.
Ugh. All right.
Yeah, that's the thing that keeps happening.
Moving on. Seth, what you got?
Hey, 19. I agree with Lee in that, like, if your final vignette had been the entire movie, I would really... And, like, it was... It's... We gave you a more or less inaccurate name. And it was
I do continuously like this goof, to be fair. It's very fun.
It's pretty fun. I
like that from now on you're gonna have to second guess who directed everything.
And yet I never do. Like, this keeps happening, and every time I'm just like, cool, yeah, awesome, let's do it.
And you have to be like, oh, are these actors actually actors in this?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, like, just to be clear, you've done Starman, Escape from New York.
Yeah.
Fucking They Live. I think you did another John Carpenter.
The Thing. I did The Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, this is their fourth fucking John Carpenter.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
You should watch my favorite director's movie.
Apparently, yeah,
maybe turns it out. Would behoove you. Yeah. But I think Zach, if you had done more with your Roderick Toombs character, I also would have been like really enthused. It was, I mean, like, I definitely like the short story. That's definitely my favorite genre of literature, mm-hmm. or, like, mm-hmm. way to present literature, not genre. Get off my back! Get off my back, Lee!
You love fucking short story.
Yeah, okay.
It's fun. Like, all of the movies that follow this formula are always very fun. Like,
yeah, and Lee, yeah. Lee,
like that, my favorite episode of The Simpsons is like that, so.
Yeah, is it a Treehouse of Horrors?
No, it's 37 short stories about Springfield.
Yeah, no, that was a good app.
Yeah, I think it's season 8. Yeah.
Would you give it a 6.5? You probably would, piece of shit.
Well,
that one gets a 9.6. Ooh, versus nice.
But you know, Lee, despite your love of long form novel, I'm definitely a short story man. I like my John Barths. I like my Chekhov.
I mean, I like John Barth's novels.
Yeah, his novels, not his short story collections. His In the Funhouse is, like, way better than a lot of his other stuff, so, like...
I don't know, dude. Have you fucking read The Sotweed Factor?
No, you know what? I haven't. And it's maybe this is so just good. A different... Oh, man, Zach hates this so much.
I gotta tell you, like, pastiche reaches another level.
Okay,
in fucking the Sotweed Factor.
What about our the narcissist sort of thing where we're talking about like early 19th century sort of like sailor tales?
Zach is. I think Zach just imploded.
I think I'm dead. I think I might have died.
Yeah, well, whatever. Anyway.
The Quavo Jones.
Yeah, get the fuck off of here. All right, so I like short stories,
and Zach, I like your short stories loosely tied. Don't you dare! Don't you dare sing!
Don't you dare, you motherfucker!
Your grandfather and me.
Oh, I do like that. That didn't sound like the Sloop John B, but it was close enough. Zach, I'm gonna give you not a great score.
Yeah, sounds about right. I never do. I somehow
never do. Yeah, you get a 6.5.
I try to keep it real every week. I try so hard to do new different things, and it's
Zach, you get a
you're not appreciated in your time.
Zach, you get a 6.5. I appreciate it, and I enjoy a short story, despite Lee's hatred, and also just.
I don't hate short stories. I just prefer novels.
Yeah, well, you're
am
wrong.
I the Vincent Gallo of this podcast? I feel like I am.
No, because
I haven't actively raped anyone. Because
your dick is normal size.
Yeah,
and
I do ride motorcycles, and well, I'm not Italian.
Okay, well, it's not a brown bunny. Like, it's not a brown bunny competition.
Yeah, but, that's true. I don't know. Okay.
Anyway, Zach,
this is gone.
Yeah, it's off the rails. Lee, you're very drunk. Yeah. Zach,
oh no,
Zach, you get a 6.5. The original movie,
yep.
I enjoyed it. It is very, very heavy-handed.
Sure enough.
Yeah, it's about one of the most heavy-handed, like, trying to be subtle movies that I've ever seen.
Sure.
I enjoyed it, though, and I think, like, the action in Zach, I think you would also enjoy it.
I thought it was a dumb goof movie, and I did not realize that it was a John Carpenter movie, and B, had actual, like, stuff, substance.
Yeah, well, it's trying to add a lot of subtext,
yeah.
And, like, I think that you would enjoy it even if the first act is a little slow, but then,
sure,
you know, Keith
sure.
David and Rowdy Roddy Piper just punching each other for 5 minutes, which is gratuitous.
5:20.
Five minutes and 20 seconds, which is just upsettingly long.
It's a bit much, yeah.
I think you would enjoy this, and I'm going to give this a 6.8.
Oh, heavy-handed loss. God damn it, every time. Okay. Well.
Just barely, though.
That's true. Just barely.
And you know how much I hate everything, so I grade things poorly.
That is also true. Also true.
Zach, what happens next time?
Yeah, next time we got the biggest, hugest whale sounds. Oh shit, actually.
Oh baby.
Don't
nice,
Seth's
nice, nice.
Favorite
Seth's
movie.
Favorite movie.
Next
episode 69.
We are doing my very favorite movie, and I know that it's garbage.
It's actually pretty good. It's not bad.
I'm gonna rewatch it next week. And I love this movie to death, but I know that it has many flaws.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sure.
That is true.
I've watched this movie with you.
Yeah.
On multiple occasions.
Yeah.
I really love this movie, but it has many, many problems.
Yeah. We're getting back very good friend of the show, Sarah, who again has
Sarah who deserves so much better than us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
That's true.
Who is going to do Seth's favorite movie, which will clearly be bleeped out because that's how we do. So,
uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
That's going to be funner than shit.
Get ready for a very exciting, me being excited, everyone else being like, oh God, Seth, really? Like,
I'm gonna be pretty excited. It's also my favorite movie out of the category that this movie inherently exists.
Yes,
in. Yeah, okay.
Out of the very specific genre of this movie, this is obviously the best of that genre.
Most people wouldn't say so, but
really? Yeah, well, most people are wrong.
We do say
and
so.
I just love this movie to death, and I don't know why. It could be like the environmentalism, or it could be the hilarious fish out of water
stories. You're getting too deep. You're getting way too deep.
I mean, until next time, there's some nuclear vessels that we gotta...